Welcome to the Fidelity Bank 2018 full year conference call. At the end of the presentation, there will be questions and answers. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this first call of the year. My name is Nnamdi Okonkwo. I'm the CEO. With me on this call today are members of the executive management team. Specifically, I have the Executive Director, Lagos and Southwest, Nneka Onyeali-Ikpe. I have Executive Director, Shared Services. I have the CFO, Victor Abejegah. I have Bola Joshua, Chief Operations and Information Officer, and the rest of the team. I welcome you. I'll just start by saying that in the past year, we continued to focus on execution of the strategy that we set out, our five-year strategy that we set out to execute since the past 2 years. This disciplined approach led to the numbers we're here to discuss today. Specifically, we're able to sustain our performance trajectory in the year under review. Therefore, we closed with a PBT of 25.1 billion, like you already know, and this represents 30.6% growth. In absolute terms, our PBT actually grew approximately 6 billion naira. And it happened on the back of the following. We had a 2.1% growth in net interest income, driven by growth in earning assets of over 22%. Also, 9.2% growth in fee-based income played a key role, driven principally by digital banking and FX income. There was also 62.7% decline in impairment charges due to over 28 billion naira IFRS first-time adoption charges, which we passed directly to equity. Net interest margin came in at 5.8% on account of lower yields on earning assets, despite corresponding decline in our funding costs. Our average yield on earning assets stood at 12.8% compared to an average funding cost of 6.2%. The growth in our earning assets by over 22%, which was funded by the strong deposit growth of over 26%, ensured there was a marginal growth in net interest income despite the lower yield environment. Our operating expenses grew by 8% to 72.1 billion. This was mainly due to driven by technology-related costs, technology operating expenses, and depreciation on intangible assets accounted for 35% of cost growth for 2018. Though the cost growth is still below double-digit inflation rate, we expect a drop in the growth rate in 2019 as we accelerate our digital transformation initiatives, which has been a major plank in helping us drive down costs. We had mentioned in our previous call, and I'd like to reiterate, that we have changed our currency conversion rate. And this is the FX rate we use in converting our balance sheet numbers. So we've changed from 333 Naira, 333 Naira. We've changed it to the NIFEX rate of 358 Naira per dollar. Our net loans and advances grew by 10.6% to 830 billion, with four key sectors representing 74% of the growth. The sectors are manufacturing, oil and gas, transport, and general commerce. Though the change in our currency conversion rate was responsible for 3.3% growth in our loan book, foreign currency loans declined by from 46% of the loan book in 2017 to 41% in 2018. Foreign currency loans basically declined by over 8% in constant currency improved cash flows of our customers and a major pay down by one of the oil and gas upstream customers. Cost of risk went down to 0.5% from 1.5% in 2017, mainly due to lower impairment charges after the impact of IFRS 9 first-time adoption charges. On NPL, we came in at 5.7%, which was an improvement from the 6.4% in the previous year, due to the 14% increase in gross loan book, 15.3 billion naira loan write-offs during the year, and then the recoveries that we made. We saw reduction in absolute NPL numbers in some key sectors, which include energy, construction, general commerce. However, our absolute NPL numbers increased by less than 1 billion naira, led by three sectors: manufacturing, transport, and agric. We are pleased with the significant increase we witnessed during the year in our total deposits numbers, which went from which grew by 26.3% to 979.4 billion. That represented absolute growth of 204 billion in 1 year compared to the 2017 position. We achieved strong double-digit growth across all low-cost deposit products, demand savings, domiciliary deposits, which translated to 100 basis points drop in funding costs from 6.2% to 6.2% from 7.2% in 2017. We saw improved foreign currency liquidity during the year as domiciliary deposits increased by over 88% to 180 billion naira and now accounts for over 18% of total deposits from 12% figure in 2017. Our retail banking strategy continued to deliver impressive results. Savings deposits increased by almost 28% to 228 billion, with low-cost deposits now accounting for approximately 82% of our deposits. And in absolute numbers, low-cost deposits increased by 34% to 799 billion. Digital banking continued to gain traction, with over 42% of our customers now enrolled in the mobile/internet banking products. Over 81% of total transactions now done on digital platforms, and 25% of our fee-based income is now coming from digital banking. Other regulatory ratios, as the presentation will show, have remained above required thresholds. Capital adequacy ratio came in at 16.7%, liquidity ratio at 39%. For 2019, we are targeting an ROE of 13%. And by 2020, we are looking at achieving ROE of 15%. So those are the summaries. I will now hand over to my colleague, who will take us through detailed presentation, and then we'll take questions thereafter. Thank you.
Thank you, Namdi. I'll just go straight to the fifth slide, which just shows an overview of the bank and the retail and digital banking evolution progress report. So savings has gone by an average CAGR of 22% over the last 5 years. It was 83 billion as at 2013. Just like Namdi said, over 40% of the customers are now enrolled on the mobile and internet banking products. And for this year, we expect the digitization of the retail lending portfolio to drive some of the asset growth. Slide 7 just speaks about the operating environment. GDP growth has been slower. Credit is improving gradually to the private sector. Foreign reserves are up. Monetary policy rate had been constant, but it was just changed. And then the oil price is above the budget benchmark. Slide 9 speaks to the key performance highlights. Interest income was up 4.2%, basically driven by the 22% growth in earning assets. PBT came in at 25.1 billion. NPLs are down to 5.7%, and the coverage ratio is now about 110%. Going to the next slide, on slide 10, we just explained in detail the key drivers. Gross earnings was up by 4.8%. The key drivers were interest income on liquid assets was up by almost 17%. Digital banking income was up by 16%. FX income was up by about 12%. and account maintenance fees about 11%. NIM declined to 5.8%. The decline in yields on earning assets outpaced the decline in yields on funding costs. But from 15.1%, it was down to 12.8%. That's the yield on earning assets. And then funding costs moderated to 6.2%. The 9.2% growth in fee-based income, the bulk of it was driven from digital banking and FX related. OPEX was up 8% over the period. Technology-related costs, which is both OPEX and depreciation on intangible assets, which includes software and technology items, accounted for about 35% of that growth. FX numbers are now reported at 358. I'm on slide 11 now, which just speaks about the balance sheet. I think Nnamdi has spoken a lot about this. If you look at the net loan book, it was up 10.6% to about 850 billion. Now, out of that, core loan growth was about 9.3% because the currency conversion increased the loan book by 3.3%. We wrote up about 15.3 billion, which dipped the loan book by about 2%. Cost of risk is 0.5% because of the 28 billion first-time adoption charge for IFRS that went in through equity. Regulatory ratios are still above the threshold. I'm now on slide 12, which just looks at the income statement on a year-on-year basis. You see that the bulk of the growth in interest income came from interest income on liquid assets, and then customer interest expense on customer deposits, there was a slight decline of about 0.1%, even though we had a 26% growth in customer deposits. And that's because most of the growth in customer deposits was from low-cost funds. Interest expense on borrowings was up about 26.4%. If you recall, the Eurobond we issued in 2017, the impact was just for about a quarter, and then for 2018, it was for the full year. All the fee income lines were up, and I've explained the growth in OPEX. The next slide just shows the quarter-on-quarter trend. That's slide 13. And so average PBT over the period. The first and last quarters are normally the weakest quarters for us, and then the second and third quarters are normally the strongest. Slide 14 just shows a breakdown of the balance sheet. You can see the growth in earning assets to 22.7%. And there was also a growth in non-earning assets. Cash reserve is about 249 billion, which is way above the regulatory threshold of 22.5%, obviously because of the strong deposit growth over the year. The bulk of the growth in the loan book came from the LCY portfolio. The LCY portfolio was up 20.7%. The decline of 1.3% in the FCY portfolio is actually because of the increase in the currency conversion rate. If you strip that out, the FCY loan book actually came down by 8% in constant currency terms. Slide 15 just shows a breakdown of the gross earnings and the key drivers. The $8.3 billion, you can see on FX income, was driven by the change in the currency conversion rate. So from a net position perspective, we had a gain. And then digital banking grew by 16.4%. The bulk of the growth is coming from the mobile banking and cards income. On slide 16, it just speaks to NIM, and you can see the trend. It's moved down from 7% to 5.8%, even though in absolute terms, net interest income was still up 2.1%. So we had to increase the earning asset base to make up for the shortfall from the lower yield environment. Slide 17 speaks about operating expenses, and you can see depreciation and technology-related costs have moved from $2.9 billion to $4.8 billion, a growth of $1.9 billion. The growth you see in depreciation is basically coming from depreciation on intangible assets. So that entire growth of $1.87 billion is coming from depreciation growth on intangible assets. On slide 18, it just shows the decline. The cost lines that have declined and those that have increased. Slide 20 speaks about the funding base. You can see a growth in most of the lines, especially the deposit lines. The decline you see for debt securities is due to the final repayment this year on the balance of the Eurobond. But on a quarter-on-quarter basis, you see debt securities moving from 160 billion to 173 billion, also because of the change in the conversion rate. And then the decline in equity is due to the first-time adoption charge for IFRS 9. On slide 21, that looks at the deposit book. It shows the growth across most of the products. And local currency deposits are now about 82% of total deposits. It was about 88% at the end of the 2017 financial year. Strong growth in FCY deposits to about 180 billion. And in absolute terms, low-cost deposits actually grew by almost 34% to almost 800 billion in 2018. The next slide, which is slide 22, speaks about our retail banking. You can see the deposits have moved from 261 billion to about 311 billion. It's about 39% of our low-cost deposits now. Savings is about 23% of the total deposit book. But from an asset perspective, retail assets are just about 4.2% of the book. Slide 23 looks at liquid assets. The improved liquidity has meant that loan deposit ratio is down to about 73%. Actual cash reserve ratio is 31.2%. It's up from 26.6% in 2017. That has put some additional pressure on the NIM. Slide 24 looks at the loan book, and you see a marked decline in the communications. That's where you have the telecoms, and then the upstream segment where we had a major paydown. The bulk of the loan growth is coming from the manufacturing, general commerce, and the transport sector. A lot of the loans in the manufacturing and general commerce sector are on lending facilities given to our customers under the intervention fund. Slide 25 is just a quarter-on-quarter breakdown of the loan book. If you compare 2017 to 2018, right now there's no sector that is above 15% of the loan book. As of 2017, the highest concentrating sector was upstream, which was 18.7%. From an internal guidance perspective, we have a sectoral limit of 20% for each sector. And then slide 26 shows a breakdown of the loan book on a currency basis. And so FCY loans are down from 46% of the loan book in 2017 to just 41% as of 2018. It's a combination of the growth in the LCY loan book and also pay downs we've had in that segment. We had loan write-offs of about 15.3 billion over the year. 75% of that amount came from the telecoms, general commerce, and the transport segment. In specific terms, FCY loans have declined from about $1.1 billion to about $970 million over the period. Slide 27 speaks to the NPL numbers. They've come down from 6.4% to about 5.7%. And absolute figures from 50.7 billion to about 51.6 billion. Principal reasons for the decline: there was a 14% growth in the loan book, the 15.3 billion write-off, and then the recoveries we've had in some of the sectors. Major sectors we've had recoveries are oil and gas services, general commerce, communication, and construction. Our coverage ratio is about 111%, and you can see the decline on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Slide 28 just shows the breakdown of the NPL portfolio year on year. You can see declines in the general commerce, oil and gas services, and then you can see the major areas where we've had growth. There was a growth in the agri, in the manufacturing, and then in the education sector. And slide 29 just shows the key NPL pressure points from a sectoral perspective: manufacturing, transport, and oil and gas downstream. Slide 30 speaks about capital. Capital adequacy ratio is 16.7%. The increase in the regulatory adjustment was due to the fact that the FCY loan also increased, the one that is above SOL, because the currency conversion rate moved from 330 to 358. If you exclude that adjustment, capital adequacy will be about 10.1%. We've discounted the local currency a bond by 40%, so we just recognize about 60% of the value. Every May, we take out 20% of the value of that bond. Slide 31 just shows the contribution of the business units to both profitability, deposits, and loans. And then slide 33 shows how we've done on the guidance for the year. Out of the 9 net interest margin, we did not achieve the guidance. For the tax rate, loan growth and deposit growth, that was achieved. NPL ratio and cost of risk was achieved. And then ROE came in at 11.8% compared to a target of 12.8%. For 2019, NIM, our guidance is 6% to 6.5%. Our tax rate, 10 to 15%. Loan growth and deposit growth, we're targeting 7.5 to 10%. Our CIR below 70%. Dividends still, we're looking at the tax, the payout ratio of 30 to 50%. NPL, the target is to keep it below 6%. Cost of risk, not above 1.25%. And then ROE for the year 2019 at 13%. Thank you, and we'll now take questions.
Thank you. We'll now be opening line for questions. To ask a question, please press 0 on your phone. To cancel, please press 7. The first question is for Oyinike Oluwa. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Emmanuel from ARM Securities. I have a couple of questions. The first question, despite... can you hear me?
Please go ahead.
Okay, despite in loan book double digits, actually saw interest income on loan book was relatively flat. So I'm just trying not to believe it's the result of lower rate environment. Can you please explain on this? And also, what sectors, can you give us an outlook for loan growth over 2019? And what sectors are you looking to explore? What sectors are you looking to explore? And this brings me to the capital base. CAR has continued to remain flat, it's like 16.7%. I don't know how comfortable are you with this current level? And my third question is, what's the bank expectation for exchange rates over 2019, as well as revaluation gains over the year? And then the last question, I don't know how much growth are you expecting from the new mobile lending products which just launched? Okay, I think one more question is, so you're getting towards an ROE of 13% over 2019. What are you expecting this growth to come from? Thanks.
Thank you. On the flat interest income, despite the loan growth, if you looked at the early part of the last financial year, yields significantly came down. The interest income on government securities came down significantly. And from a lending perspective, there was also a repricing of the loan book. So we had guided earlier on our 2017 full year call into 2018 that the revenue for this year will be driven by an expansion of the earning asset base because we already expected a lower yield environment. So we knew that to make the same net interest income, we'll have to expand the earning asset base because we knew that the yield environment will be lower. On the sectors we're looking at, it's not much different from what we've been doing. Manufacturing, for this year, we'll look at retail, the trade, oil and gas, but obviously there are some sectors we will not be expanding into. On car, how comfortable we are, it's a question we've had to take on every call. Last year, it was 16% at the end of the financial year, and what we've reiterated is that based on the profitability being generated by the business and the capitalization of those profits, we do not expect to go below 16%. That's our internal guidance limit. Secondly, with car at 16.7%, that's after taking this regulatory haircut. Without that regulatory haircut, it will be 18.1%. So we think based on the capitalization of profits every half year, we will be comfortable from a car perspective. What's our view on the exchange rate? I think the CBN governor has already given a view to the market on exchange rate management for the year. So we do not expect a significant deterioration in the exchange rate. So from a revaluation perspective, the ROE numbers we've given for this year has not factored in any revaluation gains. In terms of the risk we're taking on the new mobile lending product we just came out with. It's actually a partnership with a fintech. Initial adoption has been very good. It's a micro loan product, and so from a value perspective, it will not be significant. But in terms of a volume perspective, in terms of the number of loans we originate, that will be very significant. So that product is just one of the products we've come out with. That product is actually targeted at the mass market segment. We're going to come out with about another three or four products targeted at the various sectors. But from a portfolio perspective, we do not expect the retail lending portfolio to be more than 6.5% of our loan book by the end of this year. On ROE, where is that going to come from? It will come from four main sources. Our guidance for this year says that we're looking at expanding the deposit and loan book by 7.5% to 10%. So we expect a larger earning assets base. We also expect to increase NIM this year. And thirdly, we expect transactional fee income to go up from the digital banking space. Thank you.
The next question is for Terry. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my question. So I have a number of questions. Firstly, you said during the call, the presentation, that first quarter and fourth quarter are usually your weak quarters, while the second and third quarters are usually your strongest quarters. I'd like to know what the rationale is for that, like what happens differently within these quarters. Secondly, on your NIM, so what strategies do you have in place to improve NIM in 2019? Because I can see improvements across other metrics. NPL is improving, cost of fund is improving, but your NIM still remains weak. So what are you planning to do differently? And thirdly, do you still see further scope for lowering your cost of funds this year, which obviously would be very impactful for your bottom line? On your capital adequacy, I'd like to know the figure that we're seeing, 16.7%, is it, does it take into consideration the transitional adjustment impact that the CBN and Ask Banks to do? So is that what it is, or is just the one initial charge impact that we're seeing? If that's not the case, what would your CR be if you are taking advantage of that transitional arrangement that the CBN had asked you to do? And finally, I'd just like to know what your overall outlook for 2019 is. Like, what would the story be like? Where are we expecting to see value from? Because in 2018, we saw significant value come from FX revaluation gains, and that's not likely to happen again in 2019. So where do we expect to see significant value for Fidelity in 2019? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. It's just that we didn't get your name initially. But, okay, let me start with capital adequacy ratio. That number you see there has taken the full weight of the adjustment. So we're not in any transition arrangement. We took it completely. So it's post-adjustment. Bola, I'll then take this one.
Okay, and, you know, if you look at the transitional arrangement CBN gave, they said it was basically the fact that you could do a four-year amortization if the first-time adoption charge you have is more than the balance you have in the non-distributable reserves. We had $28.6 billion there. Our first-time adoption charge was about $28 billion. So, in summary, what you see is CAR after taking all charges. In terms of lower cost of funds, is there scope to reduce our cost of funds more? Yes, we still see scope to reduce the cost of funds. The decision that has just been taken to reduce MPR from 14% to 13.5%, because savings has an interest rate that is tied to the regulatory rate and is 23% of our book, that actually reduces funding costs. But I think the key thing for us is not just reducing the funding cost, it's actually improving the net interest margin, because if the funding cost is coming down and the yield on earning assets are coming down faster than the funding cost, then on a net basis, we're not better off. The first and last quarters, why are they the weakest quarters? If you look at the country as a whole, for the first quarter, activities are normally slower, number one. Number two, people want to know the direction in which the government is moving. And then for this year, for example, you had the election, which basically slowed down activities. For the fourth quarter for us, based on the business model we run, what you typically find out is that a lot of the businesses have concluded most of the trade and other transactions they want to do by the end of November. So December is not a month where you have full-scale business running. The business that actually peaks in December is the retail end of the business, because you have increased transactional volumes over that period. So if you look at us trajectory over 2017, 2018, that typically has been the case. What's the last question?
Outlook strategy for next.
Okay, so outlook for 2019, where do we see growth coming from? We see growth coming from fund-based income. We are expecting to grow that, basically riding on a growth on the balance sheet. So if we get a 10% growth in deposit numbers, on a deposit base that is close to a trillion, that's about $100 billion. And then if we get a 10% growth in the loan book and other earning assets, that's about $100 billion. If you look at the net interest margin we're targeting of 6% to 6.5%, that should deliver incremental revenues of about $6 to $6.5 billion just from the growth in the and earning assets base. Secondly, if you look at the adoption rate from our digital products year on year, it's been moving by an average of 15-20%. So we expect increased transactional fee income. On a year-on-year basis, electronic banking income was up more than 1. Something billion. So we expect that to also happen in this coming year. So we expect additional income from fee-based income driven by digital, fund-based income driven by an expansion in the earning assets base. And then we also think that there is scope for us to also tighten margins and get an improved NIM for this year. Thank you.
Okay. Next question is from Ayomide. Please go ahead. Ayomide, please go ahead. Next question is from Ayomide. Please go ahead. Next question is from Jerry. Please go ahead. Please go ahead.
Yeah, okay. So my name is Jerry again from Cardinalstone. And just a follow-up question to the question I asked previously. It's been in the news recently about the potential bill for the National Housing Fund, where it would probably require banks to, you know, contribute about 10% of PBT into that particular fund. I don't know if you guys have heard anything about that. So, you know, have you heard anything? What's the potential impact, or how are you going to deal with it?
Okay. We've heard that a bill has been passed at the House for banks to contribute 10% to boost the National Housing Fund. It's not yet been assented to by the president, and so we cannot give a view of it right now. But I think Stanbic itself actually did a research note on it and looked at the impact of that on the earnings of banks. And if we were to contribute 10% of our profit, that would be about $2.5 billion. And if you look at that $2.5 billion, net interest income on that, we do not know if that is going to come to fruition, but if you look at the NHF Act itself, there's something there about banks also contributing 10%. So there's been some little, I'll say, ambiguity on it, but if it comes and it's implemented and it's made a directive, definitely we will comply with it. But I don't think a $2.5 billion additional contribution to the NHF for banks to fund it will significantly derail our forecast for the year. Thank you.
Thank you. Please, for any more questions, please press 0 on your phone or press 7 to cancel. There are no more questions at this time. Please go ahead. Okay. We have another question from Jerry. Jerry, please go ahead.
So just one final question on capitalization concerns for the sector. Are you worried about any potential stringencies on banks' capital requirement? There's been talk recently about possible implementation of Basel III. You know, are there any concerns on your part regarding that if eventually it's implemented, given your position at the moment?
I don't think we have any concerns. I remember we had a lot of these questions when IFRS 9 was going to be implemented. And at that point in time, I think our capital was 16%. And so post-implementation of IFRS 9, after taking in first-time adoption charges and capitalization of profit, we've actually come out stronger from a capital requirement perspective. Whatever capital requirements will be done, what we can assure the investor community of is that internally we do our stress testing and we do our capital modeling, and we believe that we're in a position to meet all the necessary capital requirements. We have an international banking license, which implies that we need to have a capitalization, a minimum capitalization of 15%, notwithstanding the fact that we only do business now in this geography. So we don't think there are any concerns as regards capital. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Abdul Rauf. Please go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon. Thanks for having my question. So my question is on the dividends payout. So you give a guidance of 30 to 50% of profit after tax. And looking at the profit after tax declared, the 30% of PAT implies about 22 kobo, which was 22 kobo per share, which was what we saw before a U-turn. So my question is, why did the dividend payout change from 30 to 50% of PAT band to 13.9%? And in 2019, we anticipate another 30 to 50%. Like, what's going to change, and what was the reason for the reduction in the dividend payout? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Dividend payout, we gave a guidance on 30 to 50%. That's actually our dividend payout policy. In 2017, we said we were conserving capital because of the implementation of IFRS 9. So the dividend payout was reduced to something about 13 or 14%. If you look at a lot of the questions that have been asked on this call, a lot of the questions that have been asked have actually been regarding our capital position. Now, like you know, in computing your capital adequacy ratio, you factor out the dividends you are going to pay that you've proposed to pay for the financial year. The decision the board has taken is that at this point in time, given the macro environment, we would rather have a dividend payout of 11 kobo per share and maintain a stronger capitalization for the business. So in terms of the guidance we've given of 30 to 50%, we've not changed our dividend payout policy. And based on our guidance for this year, we actually expect to pay 30 to 50% of the profits we make for this year as dividends. So there's been no change in our dividend policy, but as a business and a forward-looking business, at times you have to take decisions based on existing business exigencies. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Mayowa. Please go ahead.
Hi. Okay, this is a follow-up to a previous question I asked earlier on. So I observed the CASA jumped by almost 8 percentage points, 21.6% in Q4 18. However, I didn't see any much improvement on interest, on funding cost on customer deposits. So I don't know when should we expect this improvement to filter in through this funding cost. And also, I'm not sure I got what you mentioned about this implementation of FRS 9 on your CR. So for full year 2018, have you implemented that FRS 9 on your capital adequacy, or is it going to be implementing it on a 4-year transition period?
Sorry, I got the second question. We've implemented IFRS 9 on our 2018 accounts, and so the 16.7% you see is after taking the first-time adoption charge 100%. But can you repeat the first question? I didn't get it.
Oh, okay. So the first question I mentioned was that there was about an 8 percentage point increase in your CASA, so it's 1.6%. However, I didn't see any much improvement on the funding cost on customer deposits. So I don't know, when should we expect this improvement in CASA to filter into your funding costs?
Okay, if you look at the last quarter, we all know that rates went up in the market over the last quarter. But if you look at it on a year-on-year basis, the interest expense on customer deposits actually declined by about 0.1%, despite the fact that customer deposits grew by 26%. So we expect a further decline in funding costs over this year, but on a quarter-on-quarter basis, you might have not seen a steep decline. But on a year-on-year basis, there was an over 1% decline in the funding cost on customer deposits. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next question is for Bolaon. Bolaon, please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my question and for hosting it. So my question has to do with your NPL book. During the course of your presentation, you made mention of the fact that as far as your loan book is concerned, you have an internal guideline as regards the proportion of the loan book that should be accounted for by a sector. I think you said about 15 to 20%, you can correct me. But with respect to your NPL book, you have already highlighted distressed sectors, manufacturing, transport, and oil and gas. So do you also have an internal guideline as regards the proportion that should be accounted for by each of these sectors? And going forward into 2019, what do you intend to do as regards those stressed sectors to reduce the proportion accounted for by those sectors?
Okay, so what we said is that on the loan book, the internal guidance for the sectoral limit for each sector is a maximum of 20%. And we said that as of 2018, there is no sector that accounts for more than 15% of the loan book. We don't have an internal guidance for what percentage of the NPL book should come from each of the sectors, because it's not like we budget for each of the sectors to have an NPL. So we don't have an internal guidance for each of the sectors. However, what we're doing from a prudent perspective is that we're working on those NPLs to try and bring them down. And if you look at between 2017 and 2018, the NPL barely moved by about $1 billion, despite the fact that the loan book from a gross perspective grew by about 14%. And if you look at our NPL trend over the last 3 years, it's moved from 6.6% to 6.4%, now to 5.7%. So we think we're doing a fairly decent job of keeping the NPLs under check. This year, we'll strive to keep it below 6% despite the tough macro environment. Thank you.
Thank you. So any other calls, questions, please press 0 on your phone and 7 to cancel. Would there be any more questions, please? I repeat, any more questions, please? 0 on your phone, 7 to cancel.
There are no more questions at this time.
Please go ahead, speaker.
Okay, well, I thank everyone for participating in this call, and we'll stay focused on actualizing the guidance we've given. I will see you in our next call. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes today's call. Thank you.